Hello, my name is Floyd Maxwell, justthinkit.com, doing a Floydcast, number 19, for June 23rd, 2014. Well, I must say I researched a fair bit. I spent a lot of time slogging through my notes to decide what am I going to talk about. Two big subject areas, but first, I want to ask a question. Why don't one or more billionaires commit to cleaning up all the plastic in the oceans? There's a lot of plastic in the ocean, and I think we tend to think of it as there's floating chunks of stuff like a styrofoam sheet or a plastic kid's toy. But what it is that, and I've seen a picture recently, there was a documentary called Trashed, and it showed a garbage dump somewhere in the Middle East, and the garbage dump was totally unregulated, and right next to the ocean. Right next to the ocean. So people are just dumping trash in, and it's going right into the ocean. Well, you know, here's the problem is that plastic accumulates in what are called gyres. Basically, the ocean has predictable currents, or currents that are, predictable or consistent currents that swirl. And just like, you know, when you swirl stuff down the drain, if you have stuff floating, say it's soap, right? The soap accumulates in the center of the water swirling down the drain. And the other problem is that it would be great if it all accumulated in one spot and you could just clean that one spot, right? But what happens is that plastic breaks down, and it gets progressively smaller and smaller. There's been some very kind of effective pictures I've seen also of birds, like an albatross, where they laid out the contents of the inside of the bird, all the plastic this bird had eaten over its lifetime. And sometimes they show pictures of dead birds where there's a carcass and there's some bones of the bird, and then there's all the plastic that doesn't go away. That was inside the bird that just is sort of sitting there still, you know, unmoving. No creature wants to eat it. Plastic is getting to be a big problem, and fish are eating it, of course, too, right? Cleaning your fish becomes more important when they are full of plastic. Well, plastic fundamentally floats. So the plastic problem is, you know, a top X feet of the ocean problem. Well, we've shown that we can have sane, S-E-I-N-E, where they drag huge miles and miles long nets behind boats to catch fish. Well, why don't they drag miles and miles long nets behind boats to catch plastic? For that matter, why don't you make it that the fish boats have to catch their share of plastic because they're probably contributing to it? They certainly have the technology. I mean, here's the thing. The fishing industry is so regulated because the fish stocks are so depleted that fishing boats can't fish the whole year round. So you have the technology in a fish boat to drag a net behind it. You have a fish boat that's idle for part of the year. And these are huge, expensive boats, right? You have a crew waiting for work. Why don't you pay them to go and scoop up plastic? This is a billionaire problem. This isn't a you and me problem. What's his name? Steve Ballmer recently bought the Clippers for $2 billion. What if Ballmer is probably worth $10 or $20 billion? Doesn't matter. Let's say $10. By the way, Ballmer was one of the CEOs at Microsoft. He was sort of like the third man at Microsoft. There was Bill Gates and Paul Allen who started it. And then Ballmer came in early. And he got massive shares, right? He has tens of billions of dollars. What is he going to do with that money? Anybody that's got more than, let's say, $1 billion, let's encourage them to spend it in an intelligent way. Now, of course, the drawback with trying to get plastic out of the ocean is that where's the profit? Everything is done for profit. Every single thing. Bill Gates donating money to vaccinate Africa, that's done ultimately for profit. If you trace it back down, you'll find it's not to do with health, because first of all, it's supporting vaccines, so it's supporting big drug companies. Well, that's profit. Bottom line, that's profit for drug companies. Also, the drug companies make the vaccines, right? Microsoft's buying those vaccines, giving drug companies money, and then using them on hapless people, whether they want a vaccination or whether they understand the implication or not. Vaccines, according to some documentaries, and so, I know somebody that it's directly traceable. The mercury in vaccinations directly accumulated in a person that I know, and they got a settlement for it. But it's all hushed up. There's a massive wave of trolls that hush up that kind of thing. So vaccines are questionable. drug companies are making huge profits. And what's the gain by Bill Gates doing that? There's got to be some gain, right? Maybe it's just a big market. If you can stabilize Africa and not have people dying of AIDS or various things, maybe that just means you have a bigger market for stuff. Well, that's profit. So why don't the billionaires spend some money and clean the plastic out of the ocean? And, you know, while you're at it, go to that dump in the Mediterranean, the Middle East, and get some standards there. I mean, step on with that dump that empties right out onto the ocean. Why don't you set it back a little ways? Why don't you put a 20-foot high, fine-grained mesh fence next to that dump so that 95% of it doesn't end up in the ocean? You know, you could pay one guy with a boat to pick up plastic that's ending up in the ocean right next to that dump. A stitch in time saves 9. Just preventing that dump from emptying out into the ocean would save that plastic getting spread over the entire ocean. We have an entire ocean problem, and then we have local problems. Why don't we work on both of them? That was my little op-ed or opinion piece before I get started. Well, it's been 1 week since the World Cup soccer, FIFA's World Cup 2014, has started in Brazil. There's been some exciting stuff. I watched Ochoa, the Mexican goalie, making 5 fantastic saves in one game. He was the man, for sure. And interesting, Ochoa, that name is 426. And they say about the 426 that they do more than their fair share of the work. Well, this guy truly, in this game, did more than his fair share of the work. I'm going to be sort of moving at a faster pace than usual this week just because I have so much to get through. So, on to the next soccer update. In the U.S.'s first game, which was spectacular, and they scored a goal within half a minute, which was awe-inspiring, they had an injury. Jozy Altidore got a hamstring injury. And they've been, of course, ever since downplaying it. Well, we don't know when he's going to be coming back and everything. Typically, hamstring injuries are, you know, measured in weeks or months of recovery time. He's out. But what I wanted to talk about with his name, Jozy is 674, Altidore 393, and he has a 977 total and a 7 destiny. Well, one of the things they say about the 7 destiny is the person almost achieves success. In everything, they almost succeed. And there was Altidore, this, I think he's one of their strikers. Anyway, apparently a guy was analyzing the U.S. team and saying, the U.S. team brought a smaller than normal roster, like 23 people or something. And they brought like 3 goalies, or they brought 3 of something. And when you worked it out, there was one position they didn't have duplicated. They didn't have a backup. And it was Altidore's position. So that was kind of interesting. But how difficult for Altidore to get to the World Cup, the ultimate stage for a soccer player, and then to get injured within the first game. I forget how early it was. It was relatively early, might have been the first half. And he's just running along. He's accelerating, he's obviously exerting. And bang, he pulls a hammy. Wow. Not trying to give him a hard time or anything, of course, because it's, you know, it's not his fault kind of thing. But it'd be like, you know, you're going to battle. You come from a family of soldiers. That's like in Forrest Gump. The guy wants to die in the battlefield, and he comes from a family of soldiers, and then Gump saves him, and he's mad at Gump. It'll be like getting an injury before the war starts, like on the way flying to the war, and you get some injury which is just enough to take you out of the war, but not enough to kill you, and so then you sit in the hospital bed and reflect on coming so close. On the other hand, we have Lionel Andre Messi for Argentina. The greatest soccer player in the world, maybe ever. And he's scored twice now in 2 games. I don't have, you know, special numbers to talk about with this guy. He's a 494 total, and what I can say with the 494 total, and he has 4 in the first name. And I think every name so far, they have 4 quality there. The 4 is the muscles. Muscles, sinews, and tendons. And if you think about it, in soccer, if ever there was a muscle sport, in other words, you need endurance muscles because they run an average of 10 miles a game. You need to be strong so you can jump high in the air to head the ball. There's a lot of conflict in soccer. There's a lot of contact. Well, when you have a point of contact between two people like that, muscles determines who out-muscles the other person. Anyway, so Messi has 4 in the first name and a 494 total. Very, very four-ish. Well, the 4 is consistent, powerful. His second goal, he scored from like 20 yards out. It was such an innocent looking moment. And then suddenly he kicked the perfect kick, bending it like Beckham, curving it into the corner. The moment just went from nothing much happening, still waiting, to suddenly the messy moment where just such total mastery and no one could do anything. It was at least as great a goal as any, let's say in the top five goals I've ever seen. So yay Messi. Then there was Wayne Rooney for England. Wayne Rooney finally scored a World Cup goal for England. Apparently it's been a while. I researched and someone online was defending him and they said, quote, because I guess this is his fourth World Cup. And they're saying, as for his three World Cups, no, this is his third World Cup. He's one game into the third and completed a single match in the first because he was injured and ultimately sent off. His drought amounts to four full matches, one game cut short by a red card, one in which he was taken off to rest his injury, and one in which he was substituted because he was still returning to full fitness. Well, Wayne Rooney, when you work it out, he has a seven destiny. First of all, I'm not really sure why he's getting picked on. He hasn't played in that many World Cups. Messi is, you know, similar. I don't think scoring goals in soccer is the ultimate measure of the player. I really don't. I mean, for example, with Messi, they have to double and triple team the guy. Well, that means they have to take a player away from somewhere else, or two players away from somewhere else. So if Messi never scored a goal, they have tied up. It's like they had a one or two player advantage because of Messi. Anyway, regarding Rooney, it's interesting though. They mention the guy who's defending him mentions a red card. Well, a red card you get for doing something flagrantly wrong. It's a mistake, right? And then you talk about injury, resting up from an injury. He was injured in one game and then he was still recovering in another game. Well, that's like an accident too, right? Well, sure enough, Wayne Rooney has the accident total, 527. It was just sort of interesting to research about this guy, and I end up feeling sorry for him. He sort of seems to be getting picked on needlessly. And he's had his share of, you know, bad luck, as they say. Which, you know, you can directly trace to the name. And by the way, he did score this year. But what was interesting was it was just a tap-in. To me, it doesn't sort of answer any question about the guy. It was kind of like the opposite of Messi scoring. Messi's two goals had been absolutely fantastic. And put every question, every doubt to rest. But this guy, his goal was the ultimate tap-in. You can talk about just being in the right place at the right time kind of thing. Anyway, the poor guy, nothing is resolved. Even though he scored, his team is out, England is out now. I got a quote from a story. It says, England looked world-beating, 72 strong. They brought 72 people to Brazil. The U.S. 23-man roster, let's say half a dozen support people, they bring 30 people, right? England brings double that, more than double that. Including a turf specialist, a chef, and a psychiatrist. And England is out after two games. I've indicated last week that I'm glad England lost last weekend. I hope they lose. I'm glad they lost. And, I mean, I have an English background. I could say I'm Canadian, but, you know, my father was directly from England. My mom's parents were from the Channel Islands, which is between England and France. I associate with being English, but England doesn't play good soccer. I don't want them to win playing bad soccer, and well, they went out almost the first team to go out. I'm glad. You know, this year the caliber of soccer has been very high. This year feels, for the first time in decades, it feels like things are right with FIFA and the World Cup. And I think the number one thing that's going on, the officiating. The officiating is exemplary. It's probably the most underappreciated aspect of the World Cup this year. I've watched years where teams, they just do nothing but fall down and draw penalties. And it just gets awful to look at. It's the opposite of soccer. I've watched teams be so violent to other teams that, yeah, they won the game, but in such a horrible non-soccer way. I still remember these teams that did this. I haven't forgiven them. I'm restraining myself and I'm not mentioning their names, but there are certain teams that I have a considerable lack of respect for because of it. But this year, the soccer is emerging. One of the things they're doing this year is they're changing the refereeing on the fly, meaning there was a referee, for example, who wasn't doing a very good job. And the start of the second half, suddenly he started doing a better job. It's like someone talked to him. And the commentators talked about it. Another thing is, when they give a free kick, the defenders are supposed to be at least 10 yards away from the ball. The idea is that the team that got offended against, got the foul committed against them, they get to kick the ball. They get like a full possession, let's call it. In basketball, they do a jump ball sometimes, right? In the jump ball, each team sort of fights equally for the ball. Well, in soccer, the free kick is like, here, you get the ball. It's like inbounding the ball in basketball. Well, to make that a truly fair thing in basketball, when they inbound the ball, you can be, 1 inch away from the guy who's inbounding the ball. Because he can throw it over your head or to the side, But in soccer, to kick it, the ball starts out on the ground. It's relatively easy to block it if you're, 6 inches away. Three guys 6 inches away could completely block the ball. So you got to be 10 yards back. Well, this is one of these things that soccer players have abused forever. They don't go 10 yards back. And then the referee says, no, you got to go back to here. And then they go back almost to there. They go, and the referee says, counts off 10 yards and indicates, and they go back to 8. And the referee walks away, gives up. And then while the referee's walking away, they start inching up. They start marching up. And then they're like 6 yards away by the time the guy kicks it. Well, this is just not soccer. This is just creepy cheating. It's horrible to watch, and it used to happen all the time. Well, what have they done this year? They got this special, basically they call it shaving foam, shaving cream. It's some aerosol cream, so that the idea being that it's something you can spray. It creates a big white line, and then it literally, in a matter of 30 seconds, it goes away. So during the time that it's needed for the kick, there it is. Everyone knows where the line is. There's no walking over that line. And apparently this has worked out so well that it's going to become part of the Premier League, part of soccer itself. It's going to become a fixture. Well, that's part of what you need to do to make soccer good. You need to officiate it tight. You can't let people get away with anything. I still have sort of issues with the contact side of soccer and how that's handled. There are a lot of incidents where one player slides into another player with his, boots, with his cleats, supposedly to go for the ball. And, sometimes they call it, sometimes they don't. And the biggest problem of all still, I think, is soccer has three or four mechanisms to give out a penalty, but they're not enough. Level one is you give advantage, which is giving nothing. So in other words, if you commit a foul against me, but I still have the ball, the referee will indicate advantage. In other words, play on. Well, okay, the good thing there is that's a good thing for the fans. The play doesn't stop. The next level, let's say you do something, a foul against me, and I lose the ball. Referee blows the whistle, they give me the ball back, and I can kick it back into play. Problem with that? That's no penalty to the defender. None at all. They broke up the play, and maybe they needed a chance to get their breath back. They got that. It's like a little timeout. They created a timeout with no consequence at all. Now the next level is if it's kind of flagrant, if it looks like, you might have hurt me, like you weren't really going for the ball, well then you might get a yellow card. The problem is the yellow card is a pretty stiff penalty, and there's nothing in between. It's probably the equivalent in hockey of giving a 5-minute major penalty. With a 5-minute major penalty, it lasts for 5 minutes. You're short one player for 5 minutes. By the way, in hockey you have 5 forwards. 5 non-goalies. In soccer, you have 10. So when you take off one hockey player out of the 5, that's a massive advantage to the other team. They now have 25% more players trying to score. That's a strong disincentive. Hockey has a 2-minute minor and a 5-minute major. 2-minute minor, if the team that got fouled against, if they score once, that 2-minute penalty is over. With a major penalty, it lasts 2.5 times as long, and if you, no matter how many times you score, the penalty still endures. Well, the problem with the yellow card is it's almost like that 5-minute major penalty in hockey. Because what happens is, if you get 2 yellow cards, you're kicked out of the game. If you're kicked out of the game, in theory, you could get kicked out of the game on minute 1, and your team plays a man short for 89 minutes. So the yellow card is very close to being a major penalty. Now, the major penalty in soccer is the red card where you get kicked out of the game. I don't know of any game where when you get kicked out, your team is short the rest of the game. In hockey, if you get kicked out, they call it a game misconduct, your team has no penalty. You are kicked out of the game, that's it, no other consequence. Now, the official might give another consequence. Let's say you start a fight. You get a 5-minute penalty for fighting, And then you might get a game misconduct, assuming you did something excessive. So you might have two different penalties. But the game misconduct by itself, there is no impact on the team other than you are no longer able to play. In football, you get kicked out of the game, exactly the same. No other consequence, you are kicked out of the game. Baseball, same thing. But in soccer, when you get kicked out of the game, your team is short a man for the rest of the game. This is a very major penalty. So what happens? No referee wants to give out a red card. Red cards are given out inconsistently, and then the yellow card, the card that sort of leads directly to it, because you get two yellows, it equals a red, and you're kicked out. And the worst thing is they sort of change the rules now where the yellow card, it lasts from one match to the next, specifically in the World Cup on the round robin, the first round. The 32 teams are divided into 8 groups. Each group is 4 teams. So one team plays each of the other 3 teams. So they play 3 games in the round robin level. Well, if you get a yellow card in game 1 of the 3 games, and if you got a yellow card in game 2, you would get kicked out of game 3. And I think you get kicked out immediately, or you can't play the following game. Whatever it is, bottom line is you miss an entire game somewhere. So the yellow cards now are sort of even a greater penalty. Well, what happens when you have too much of a gap between basically no penalty? You get a penalty kick, that's like a timeout for the defenders. That's no penalty. The difference between that, the jump from that to the yellow card is so big. And then now because the yellow cards carry over from game to game, the yellow card is like an even bigger penalty. Well, then what happens is the referees don't want to give out yellow cards. Then you get into a very gray area. Now basketball, this is where basketball gets it right. Basketball calls a free throw on the slightest amount of contact. It's really good when you get incidental contact. Basketball is the best of any sport for incidental contact fouls. You can't get away with it in basketball. Basketball is bad when the guy is going in to shoot and you foul him, because he was going to get 2 points on that shot. You foul him and he gets 2 throws. He has to make both throws because they're only 1 point each, just to break even. That's ludicrous. Basketball, the fouling, the value of free throws is wrong. It should be doubled. Free throws should be 2 points each, and you should easily be able to double or triple up on a foul. I've talked about it before, but basketball fouls, I can hardly see straight when I think about it, it's so bad. Well, soccer is the next worst. There's too big a gap. And so what soccer needs is, they need a consequence when you foul someone and if in any way it seems deliberate or what they call sloppy tackling, i.e. you should have gone for the ball but you went for his legs, they should make you, and some sports do this, I think rugby does this, you have 2 minutes where you're in the penalty box and you can't play for 2 minutes. It's basically like hockey. Well, soccer should have that. And that would be a level below the yellow card, not as bad as the yellow card, but you have to sit in a penalty box, let's say for 1 minute or 2 minutes. It doesn't really matter how long. What happens is it's a disincentive for that type of behavior. And that type of behavior right now is the worst behavior in soccer. The sliding into the player, sometimes touching the ball and sometimes not, and how the referees police that. That's the worst part of soccer. Another good thing about soccer, by the way, this year, the FIFA World Cup, the heading. There's very little heading. And when there is, they're scoring goals. Oh, there's been some great goals on headers. Great goals. So many different teams, so many different players. Heading is finally what it should be. Used to score goals and really almost nothing else. Took until 2014 to see it. Nice. So soccer's been great. I don't watch it all the time. I sort of seem to have lost my ability to watch it all the time. But Lionel Messi, just thinking about that dude, and just watching him play. Wow. Just such brilliance. Such brilliance. It's kind of like when you watch a great actor and they take a little nothing scene and suddenly they've just got you so involved, so engrossed, so amazed by their acting. It's kind of like that. All right, 2 more World Cup soccer bits. I was making notes, in my Floatcast file after watching the soccer like a week ago. And once again, there's like a disappointing part of soccer. And that is, in soccer, the announcers, there's like a play-by-play guy, like in other sports, to do the same thing, football, baseball, they have a guy who does the main action, then there's a guy who does the color commentary. The second guy is the guy who, he's sort of sitting back and watching, and whenever he sees something he wants to comment on, he comments on it. Interesting in golf, everyone can comment. you know, you get like 10 guys covering golf. It's a real challenge to cover golf, and you have a great number of commentators, and then any of them can comment on anything, and that's an awesome part of the sport, is the commentary. Play-by-play, you can mute. I've got Formula One racing on right now. It's totally muted. There is almost nothing in Formula One that you actually need to see. That you actually need to hear and not see. And sort of the irony is, of course, that, you know, racing makes a lot of noise. And I think a lot of people like it for the noise. But the noise, you know, there's a saying in computing, a signal to noise. And I guess it came from electronics era. The goal is to have a high signal to noise ratio. You know, it's the same in a chat room, right? You want, you know, valuable chatting, not people attacking other people. Good luck with it. Well, you know, in racing, the signal to noise ratio is low in terms of the audio. You're not getting a lot when you listen to, you know, NASCAR racing or any type of racing, dragsters. But watching it, you know, the camera work. I guess the guy who, Bernie Eccleston, the guy who scored the rights to film and broadcast Formula One, I guess he's a billionaire. Just that one little coup changed his life forever. You know, it used to be racing was poorly covered, and now it's phenomenally covered. And they have things like infrared shots of the tires on the cars, so that in real time you're watching the tire heat up and cool down. And the visual coverage of racing is phenomenal. But the audio, honestly, if you've heard one engine race, you've heard them all. There's just nothing to be game at. Oh, I'm not watching a pit change right now. 15 guys. And they can now change all the tires on a Formula One race car in 2.5 seconds. That's come in, stop, they lift the car up, they loosen the lug nut on all four tires, take the lug nut off, take the tire off, put a new tire on, put the lug nut back on, tighten the lug nut, lower the car down, all in 2.5 seconds. Truly mind-boggling. Truly. Very impressive. Very awesome. And again, you don't need to hear guys talking to watch that. Anyway, okay, so watching soccer, you know, the main play-by-play guy, you don't really need commentary. You know, that play-by-play is take it or leave it. And yet, many of the play-by-play people are exceptional. I think of Joe Buck taking over from his dad. Joe Buck does football and baseball. Phenomenal guy. Perfect. I think of Mike Tirico at ESPN. Perfect commentary. Of course, the famous Al Michaels in football. But the commentary guy is a little bit more problematic. I'm going to go right to the person I think is the greatest color commentator of them all across all sports, and that's John McEnroe. John McEnroe in tennis. He is so good at it. I mean, he is the Robert De Niro or whatever of commentary. The irony being that I got so annoyed at John McEnroe when he played tennis. He had such a foul, bad attitude. But as a commentator, he is top of the heap. Hang up, Beats. Speaking of tennis, another guy that used to be really good was John Newcomb. I haven't heard from John Newcomb in a while. I miss the guy. A great tennis player, you know, one of the sort of early great players, and then a great commentator. In football, you know, John Madden was famous for his colorful color commentary, but honestly not adding much value. There are many good color commentators in football. Dan Dierdorf, phenomenal. Really a treat. Someone like Troy Aikman, kind of a surprise. The, you know, former quarterback for Dallas Cowboys, great commentator. Baseball, oh, the guy I really dislike, what's his name, Tim McCarver, oh, man, oh, the worst color commentator almost of any of them. He always does the World Series, he does the color commentary for the World Series of Baseball, and he is a total dud. What he reminds me of is James May in Top Gear. James May is the dud of Top Gear, and Tim McCarver is the dud of baseball. Anyway, I'll move on. In soccer, I don't know of a good color commentator, period. So you have the play-by-play guys, they're exceptional. There was a guy who used the phrase firecracker. That was a real firecracker of a goal. He said it 4 years ago. Everyone still remembers it, probably in the soccer world today. It was such a great use of the word firecracker. Well, the color commentators, they are so forgettable. They're so bad. And I think it's in part because they're so English. They're not focusing on the play. They don't know how to add value to their commentary. And so, anyway, I just wrote down, here's my comment in my notes. The color commentary guys are clueless twits. One guy, Spain was playing, and the ball was passed into towards the goal. And the guy didn't score. It hit his foot and it didn't go in. And the commentary guy said, he took his eyes off the ball completely. Well, what actually happened was the guy was racing towards the goal. He had to leap in the air for some reason. And he was coming down. And in the process of coming down, you're thinking about putting your foot on the ground. You're about to land, right? And then he had to somehow hit this ball in the air. Well, it was just too much for the guy. And it was his left foot. Who knows, maybe he's right-footed. Saying he took his eye off the ball completely was just not taking into account all the other things going on. And it was like a typical example. Well, anyway, 3 days later I read this online. The BBC's answer to Gary Neville, Phil Neville, made 445 people upset enough to phone the BBC with official complaints. It was a tough debut, but he took it well. So this is a guy who was a color commentary guy. And 445 people complained about him. There's one at each of the venues here. There's like four venues where they're playing soccer, and there's a color commentary guy, a different one at each of those venues. So they're all bad. And so he tweets something. He says, first live co-com last night. Sometimes you have to take the criticism. Thanks for the feedback. Ha ha ha. That's his reply. Oh boy. So, anyway, collectively, when will the next or first great soccer color commentary guy emerge? The game is improving. The officiating is improving. When will the next great color commentary guy appear? Look forward to it. Finally, there was a story, 17 Things We Learned from Brazil Soccer. One of the 17 things, it showed a picture of Japanese fans, after their team had played and lost, picking up garbage in the stadium after the game. Now, have you ever heard of anyone doing that? I don't mean like you've got your last drink in your hands and you just happen to discard it in the waste bin on your way out. These Japanese fans had large trash bags and they were walking around the stadium. It showed a whole bunch of them picking up trash. Well, apparently this so impressed. Here's the quote. Images of the visitors, i.e. Japanese fans, carrying out post-game litter picking sweeps, meaning sweeping the stadium to pick up litter. Okay. A show of respect to the hosts caused national pride back home in Japan, with the Kyoto News Agency reporting, quote, despite defeat, the charisma of Japan fans wins hearts in Brazil. And Brazil's Globo Esporte said the gesture was an eye-opener for a country where it is not uncommon to see urine raining in stadiums. I guess meaning that people just pee in a stadium, like while they're watching the game. And quote, unfortunately, even flying toilets, quote. It is undoubtedly the lesson of the World Cup. It teaches us much. Well, it does teach us much. The Japanese, you know, there's a respect level there in their culture that other cultures could do well to study and learn from, without a doubt. Unfortunately, it can also manifest as groupthink, where they're so, quote, respectful, quote, that they're afraid to voice a negative word, especially about senior people. Anyway, that was a nice little sign-off on the soccer. Another thing that happened last week, sadly, was that Tony Gwynn passed away. Tony Gwynn played baseball, Major League Baseball. And after he retired, he did a TV work, color commentary work. Well, Tony Gwynn was the kind of guy that when you heard him and saw him, he just put a smile on your face. That likable, happy quality, in addition to being a great. So he died of cancer, age 54. Let's have a go. Tony Gwynn, let's look at his name. 652 first name, Gwynn, G-W-Y-N-N, 742 last name. So first of all, you see twos in both the first and the last name. Well, the two-ish person is going to be likable. And they're going to be likable in the sense that they don't offend other people. They know what to say. Better than any other number, the two knows what to say. The two is the salesman. The salesman, they know what to say, right? They want to get those little yeses out of you to get the big yes of the sale. Well, Tony Gwynn got plenty of little yeses out of us all. His total, Tony Gwynn, he had a 494 total. Well, we've already seen the 494 total in Lionel Andre Messi. The 4 is the muscle number. Gwynn was remarkable in the number of hits that he got. Gwynn's career batting average was exceptional. His ratio of hits to strikeouts was super good. In other words, he got so many hits. He had so many multi-hit games. And he had so few games where he struck out like 3 times. There are players that they routinely strike out 5 times in a game. Gwyn was, his ratio was just like 10 times better than average. Well, one of the things that Gwyn did was he used a lighter than normal bat as he got older. Because as you get older, you know, you lose some muscle strength. And by using a lighter bat, you can swing it faster. And you can swing it, therefore, more accurately. And instead of the fastball blowing by you, you know, if you can swing it faster and more accurately, you can chip, get a tick on that fastball. You may not even get a hit. You might hit it foul. But in baseball, hitting the ball foul, you're not out. Unless someone catches it in foul territory. So as a result, you know, he got way more hits than the average player. He was up there in the top 10 or something all time. He played a longer career than normal. Well, anyway, let's get back to this. 494 total. So that's the muscles, as we talked about earlier. The strength in the muscles. Oh, he stole a lot of bases, too. I mean, he was an all-around player. And he even worked on his fielding, and he improved his fielding and became a gold glove fielder. I mean, to me, Tony Gwynn is like, if you had to model the perfect baseball player that everyone should model themselves after, it would be Tony Gwynn, with one exception that I'll get to. All right, so he died of cancer at a pretty young age, age 54. 494 total in his name. The four is the cancer number. As good as the, you know, the four can be in many ways, with Gwyn, you know, it made him consistent, it made him improve in small ways year after year to eventually become a great player. You know, that's partly the four at work there. But it's the cancer number. It's not a healthy number. The type of food that you eat when you have a 494 total is the type of food that'll give you cancer more readily, among other things. And also slows down your elimination. So it's a double whammy. You eat inappropriate food, and your elimination is slower than normal, so you have poison in your eliminative tract. Poison sitting there for longer than normal amounts of time, so it causes cancer. Pretty straightforward cause and effect there. The four is the meat and potatoes combination. I think potatoes by themselves, you know, in moderation is not that big a deal, but you throw in meat there. Meat is almost impossible to digest for humans. We're not meant to. It's slow to digest as it is. And then if you have a slow system, and then if you really like eating it, you eat lots of it, well, that's a triple whammy. You can see how he died from cancer. You could predict that from his name. But he also chewed tobacco. And he even admitted in later in life that that was probably what gave him... I think he had cancer of the cheek. Like he had like a tumor or something in his cheek. So, I mean, you put chew in your cheek and then you get cancer of the cheek. Well, cause and effect. But it's too bad because he was such a likable guy. The quote that he's most famous for, remember these two things, play hard and have fun. Well, the play hard, the hard work, that's the 494 total, perfect. And the have fun, that's the three. Well, when you work on his birthday, he's born May 9, 1960. There's three minors, three influences in the birthday, the month, day, and year. So those are a 5, a 9, and a 7. When you add them all up, you get 5 and 9 is 14, and 7 is 21, 2 and 1 is 3. He's the 3 in the birthday. That's the fun birthday. So, Tony Gwynn, you know, he perfectly shows the numbers, was likable, he contributed to the game, and he died too young. He had so much to offer. There's all kinds of videos. He's done books. And yet, it could have been so much more. He could have done it for another 20 years. That's too bad. But here's to Tony Gwynn. An inspirational player in his own right. All right, when I was prepping my material for this floodcast, I was thinking of what to talk about. And I thought, well, let's go through the wireless radiation articles. Seems like I got a lot of them. So I organized them. I put them into sections, counted them up. I have 36 stories. You know, I've sort of tried to restrain myself and not talk about them each week, but as a result, the stories just accumulate. So what I've done is I've got them in sections. I'll try and go through it, and I won't cover, you know, every single story, but you'll get the idea. All right. At first, I had things in the order that the press talks about them. The press right now loves to talk about the Internet of Things, gadgets like the Fitbit, wireless this and wireless doorbells and stuff like that. And then they want to talk about speeds going up. And then they want to talk about having wireless everywhere, everyone getting service by wireless. And then, oh, yeah, there are some privacy issues that does come up, you know. And then something that they don't even want to connect in a story, but the connection is obvious, is the sleep issues and health issues. Well, I'm going to go at this in reverse order. I'm going to go at this from the health issues first, then the privacy, then the speed, etc. Because otherwise, if we just come at this from the Internet of Things and gadgets, we all get sucked in by gadgets. And stories about gadgets don't seem to be bad to us. So, let's start with the health issues first. All right, I have 6 health issue, sleep issue stories. This is just in the last couple of months. First one, they've come up with a new syndrome. It's called non-24 syndrome. Apparently, 75% of blind people are affected. They have trouble sleeping at night. Part of it is that they don't know what's night and what's day, right? To people that are truly blind, they can't distinguish. The light intensity doesn't give them any information. So they have trouble sleeping at night. And I've got a saying here related to this story. Nothing makes drug companies happier than creating a new disease. Well, they've certainly created a new disease, and now they can refer to that new disease, come up with drugs that supposedly help that new disease, etc. But you know, what is the bottom line of it? Sleep issues, right? And why should blind people be any different from the rest of us when it comes to sleep issues? Well, I've maintained in my wireless radiation talks, microwaves are a sleep robber. In fact, that's their number one harm-causing thing. Wireless radiation is like being in bright sunshine the whole time. So if you have your wireless router routing senselessly on at nighttime in your house, you're getting dosed with radiation. If you have your cordless DECT phones on, dosing you in the middle of the night when you don't need your phones on, then it's like your body's being told, it's daytime, it's daytime, it's daytime, and you can't sleep, you can't get REM sleep, you can't rebuild. Okay, next story. 10 weird things you should know about sleep. This was an article on a site I visit frequently. This was June 9th. Well, this is just I just have this one here as a placeholder. I'm seeing a story on sleep every day. Well, why are these stories coming up? Because suddenly we're having trouble, more trouble than we used to have sleeping, right? Next story. Studies suggest that mobile phone exposure negatively affects sperm quality. Well, maybe you don't need more detail than that. Bottom line, mobile phone exposure, wireless radiation exposure is bad news. And this is just yet another proof of it. Of course, not much was made of this story. I only saw it appearing in one place. And on we go to the next thing, right? And then we have a product called Doze. D-O-Z-E. Doze endlessly streams relaxing music. It's an Android app, an app for your phone, that helps you relax or sleep. And it does so with microwave radiation from your phone, right? So you got your microwave radiation emitting phone. And by the way, smartphones are much worse than regular phones, especially when you're not on a call. On a call, they're regulated. When you're surfing the net, they're not. So you got your phone, it's streaming music. So while it's streaming, you're like, oh, you're diddling around on your phone and going on the internet, right? It's blasting you with radiation to help you sleep. Wow. Got a little story here. How a microwave heats a hot pocket. So this is a story explaining how it works, how it does that heating function. And then there was a comment that I extracted from Slashdot. Because on Slashdot, you get a lot of techie guys. These are guys that work with microwave radiation. You know, that's their bread and butter. They're an electronic engineer, whatever. And these are the guys working, having to work with microwaves. And I guess one thing you don't do is fool around with when you're working in a microwave oven. If you don't dot all the I's and cross all the T's. Well, this guy was working on an open microwave oven. He didn't shield himself properly, turned it on, and he died. Bang. From microwave radiation. So normally they're shielded, but they're shielded just down to the levels that ICNIRP says are okay. 1% of the dose it takes to kill you by cooking you to death. Yeah, really. In my latest technical research video called Toxic, I talk about that among other things. You can check it out on my website. I'm pretty proud of Toxic. It's an 80-minute video or 80-minute audio. It's pretty thorough. Fluoridation comes out looking very bad, and of course, microwaves do as well. Anyway, poor guy turns on an open microwave that he's working on and promptly dies. All right, so there's 6 stories on sleep issues. Let me just archive those. I won't bother you with those again. All right, the next category of stories, of which I have 7, are privacy-related issues with wireless. First one, I mean, these are not in chronological or any other kind of order. I just have accumulated them. How Nest is already using all that data from its army of sensors. Well, Nest, that's the home thermostat that is wireless for some reason. Google bought Nest, so now Nest is never going to go away. You're stuck with wireless radiation thermostats for the rest of your life. Well, they accumulate information, right? If you make a change in that thermostat, it's all accumulated information now. It's a little computer tracking everything. Anyway, I won't even get into the details of it, but bottom line is it's the snooping of smart meters were already doing this to your house. Well, now the Nest thermostat's going to do it even worse. All right, next story. The smartphone Star N9500, this is a Chinese smartphone, comes preloaded with spyware. The German security company G-Data found out the phone contains a falsified version of Google Play. Software will resist attempts to uninstall it, will also delete any traces of itself in the log files, and it blocks security updates. Nice. Phone is a third of the cost of equivalent models. There's two of them. It looks like a Samsung Galaxy S4, inside and out. Spyware gives access to the microphone, camera, data, and communication. The spy program is called Android Trojan UUPay.D, and data is sent to an anonymous server in China. And then this was an article on SoylentNews.org, and the commentary that someone, when they submitted the story, they said, don't assume trust just because you bought the device brand new, and same goes for your smart TV. And then in the other extreme, the Electronic Freedom Frontier, you can check them out, EFF.org. They're designing a tool and they're recommending that you open access to your wireless router as a way to boost your privacy. Well, first of all, if you open up your Wi-Fi router to others, they're going to use it. And if they use it, that's more radiation on you. So that's bad. And second of all, the theory is that by opening up your router, you can claim that other people, when they try and implicate you for doing something, you can say, well, I have an open router, and so it could have been other people. Anyway, it's kind of an absurd premise, and the EFF generally, Electronic Freedom Frontier, generally seems to do good things, but this just shows them getting caught up in the wireless frenzy and suggesting something really, really dumb, I think. And more radiation, right? Next story, Swype, S-W-Y-P-E, like Skype, only Swype, is a third-party cell phone keyboard. Well, users have discovered that it's been accessing location data extremely frequently, making almost 4,000 requests per day. Well, those requests are wireless radiation requests. Not everyone's seeing them, yada yada. Well, here's the problem with these applications on your phone, is you don't know what they're doing and when they're doing it. Here's a keyboard. Now, how often should a keyboard be accessing the internet? The answer is never, ever. Keyboards don't change. Your little keyboard app doesn't change. It has no reason to access the internet at all, ever. And here it is doing it 4,000 times per day. This is what you're putting your trust in, the hands of these apps. These apps aren't regulated. I guess it's a Google Play, so it's an Android app. Google Play is not vetting this app. It's not preventing this app from doing this. It's not testing it. That's horrific. All right, headline. Eavesdropping with a smart TV. It was a Slashdot story. They turned a smart TV into an audio bug. So, I mean, the story's obvious. Smart TV, well, it works both ways, right? Someone else can control your TV, and now they're watching you and monitoring you through your TV. Yummy, right? All right, next story. Nest and Fitbit are planning on turning user data into a multi-billion-dollar business. Okay, I've already talked about the using of information. I think I talked about it from Nest. Well, the Fitbit people are doing it too, right? These are the ones that you wear your Fitbit, which is a little worse than the Nest in that sense. You're carrying it with you all the time. And then it's tracking you all the time. There's more on the Fitbit later on. And then I put it into the privacy category, this last story in this section. Britons, British people, trust Google more than their families. Why? Why do we do that? You know, there's nothing wrong with using a service. I use Google and Google services a lot, but we don't have to trust them. And now Google has bought Nest, and these are all these, half these stories are related to Nest and Nest-type products. Okay, the next group of stories are speed-related issues, wireless speed issues, five stories. Remember, when wireless speed goes up, the radiation goes up, the poisoning goes up. Okay, a story from yesterday on CNET.com, bipartisan Wi-Fi bill. They're trying to get access to the 5 gigahertz band for Wi-Fi use. Quote, because the spectrum is at a higher frequency, it will also pave the way for faster speeds on Wi-Fi. What's more, the 5 gigahertz will allow the deployment of gigabit speed downloads using Wi-Fi. That's really the same point as the first sentence. Bottom line, more speed, right? More speed, more radiation. Another story, Verizon announces XLTE, twice as fast as LTE, with twice radiation. Another story, 5G is going to be up to 1,000 times faster than 4G. Well, that's a lot more radiation, right? Another story, Wi-Fi networks are wasting a gigabit, but multi-user beam forming will save the day. Now this story, joining together multiple beams or signals together to get more bandwidth, well, that's what that previous 5G is going to be 1,000 times more than 4G is all about, is joining together signals to get more speed, more radiation. It's all the same. These are all the same story, basically. And then here's a story. In the hunt for more spectrum to speed up mobile networks, Vodafone and Huawei Technologies have successfully tested technology that lets LTE and GSM share the same frequencies. Well, the bottom line is GSM is sort of old news and getting phased out. LTE is the new thing. By LTE being able to use GSM frequencies, they can get more speed, right? Well, more radiation. That's the future. More speed, more radiation. Alright, two more sections. The fourth section is, I've categorized it as more radiation and radiation everywhere. This story says, the futuristic dream of wireless charging. So this is charging something wirelessly. Well, if you're trying to charge something wirelessly, that means you're having to have very energetic wireless radiation, wireless waves. The second story is, researchers develop Wi-Fi for power that charges from 15 feet away. Well, bottom line, these stories, way more radiation everywhere. Supposedly because you need that to charge something. You can't put a phone in a dock. You have to do it wirelessly, right? Yeah, wireless can be convenient. Well, wireless charging? Horrific. There's another moon story again. This one's talking about establishing a broadband communication from the moon back to Earth. Of course, we're not even on the moon. You know, humans are not even on the moon. But we need a broadband communication, a high-speed communication back to Earth. No, we don't. What is this story about? This story is about getting us used to wireless. It's a miracle. It's the future. And if they ever establish something like that, then they're dosing us all. And we can't claim, hey, I'm being killed by wireless, because wireless is everywhere. It's like the fluoridation defense. By putting fluoride in everything and everywhere, then you can't point your finger and say, this toothpaste killed me. This fluoridated water killed me. No, because it's everywhere. Third story in this section, Wi-Fi in U.S. schools going to cost $3.2 billion. I guess they have a goal that 99% of all students will have access to Wi-Fi by the year 2018. So in the next 4 years, we're going to make sure that 99% of students are being dosed with Wi-Fi radiation the whole time they're at school. Isn't that nice? Very thoughtful of them. Next story, this super cheap cell phone network brings coverage almost anywhere. This is a cell phone in a bag, basically a cell phone network in a bag. So you can take it, you know, top of Mount Everest or whatever, Everest Base Camp, and now you've got a cell phone network at Everest. Going on a hike and you got a cell phone network in the park. Isn't that awesome? Another story, radiation workplace. The U.S. Postal Service plans to spend up to $100,000 to investigate how it can utilize low-cost sensors and related wireless technologies to improve the efficiency of its operations. And they currently scan letters up to and parcels up to 11 times during processing, 1.7 trillion scans a year. In theory, the Postal Service believes that everything it uses, mailboxes, vehicles, machines, or a letter carrier, could be equipped with a sensor to create what it terms the Internet of Postal Things. So, bottom line, wireless radiation everywhere at the post office. Well, isn't that swell? And of course, that's just the first step, right? Every workplace is going to be wireless-enabled, wireless-saturated in a short period of time. All right, next story. Google will lease its balloon-based wireless network to telcos. Well, we've talked about having drones flying around giving us all wireless radiation. We've talked about Google and their balloons, Project Loon, Lunatic, giving us balloon-based wireless radiation. And now they're going to lease it to telcos. Well, when you lease it to the telcos, then it becomes entrenched and people depend on it. And now it's essential. Well, then it's not going away. It's all being done so they can dose us equally rather than right now. If you live near a cell phone tower, you get many, many times worse radiation than someone who lives, you know, half a mile away. It's a huge difference. And your house blocks, especially my shielded house, blocks the people behind me from getting their cell phone signal. So by having it in the air, in the sky, in a balloon, in a drone, then it can't be blocked. You know, it's actually a good idea. The interesting thing is that these companies are rushing to do this because they're trying to keep ahead of the people like myself that are revealing the truth about wireless. And if everyone knew the truth, well, then wireless would stop. And so they want to quickly get it established and get it everywhere, get it us all hooked on it and needing it, and also get the dose down. There's all kinds of things to get the dose down. Another one, you'll see the ads for Verizon where these two guys are in the crawl space and some office worker asks them, what are you guys doing? And, oh, we're just making sure you can access your Facebook from work a little easier type thing. Oh, thank you, Verizon. Well, that's getting the radiation lower levels, but more ubiquitous, more everywhere. Here's another story. Parks Canada will be adding wireless internet access to many of its wilderness parks in the near future. I mean, do we need to say a word about that? Just what you need at a park. Wireless radiation. The two are meant for each other. And then we have Bero, B-E-R-O, the open source Bluetooth robot. This Bluetooth-enabled robot comes pre-programmed to drive around, move its arms and head, and play back sound files and dance to the music. Whee! Isn't that just an essential service to all mankind? Finally, in this section, sharing your Wi-Fi. We've talked about Comcast not telling people that your new router from Comcast is a Wi-Fi hotspot. It's Wi-Fi enabled, and you're sharing wireless, and you're beaming wireless radiation, and you're servicing the people outside your home with wireless radiation, which you get dosed with at the same time, whether you knew it or not. Well, it turns out that BT, a British internet service provider, is also doing exactly the same thing. Finally, I've got stories on the Internet of Things, the gadgets, the wireless gadgets. 9 stories on that. All right, Consumer Reports in their most recent issue, Run Your Home from Your Phone. So it's a wireless gadget issue. Well, the only difference between Run Your Home from Your Phone and Ruin Your Home from Your Phone is the letter I. So I enhanced that headline by saying Ruin Your Home from Your Phone. All right, next story. The next Fitbits, they're going to have heart rate sensors, GPS info, atmospheric tracking, and smartphone notifications. Do we need any of this? Do we need to be wearing something that's doing all that? First of all, your smartphone is already doing it. They mentioned just in passing the recall of the Fitbit Force. I guess that was the model name. They mention it and they just move on to the new products. They've almost done no talking about the radiation burns that something like 250 people experience from Fitbits. All right, third story in this section. Google coming out with Android Wear. You know, we have software, hardware, and they're usually spelled W-A-R-E as in wares, you know, warehouse, something that you sell. Well, this Android Wear, they're so clever, W-E-A-R, something you're going to wear on your Android, your smartphone. It's probably devices that tap into your smartphone and, you know, you've got communication using wireless radiation from these various devices to your smartphone that you're carrying. You know, it's just all growing so ridiculously. Another story, Google Fit, they're calling it, is going to curate data from, quote, various devices and apps. Well, it's another gadget that's tracking you, bottom line. Next story, Apple announces HealthKit for iOS 8, and Apple is planning a smart home system. So I got two different mentions of that. Yesterday, digitaltrends.com, Microsoft gets into the home automation arena. And according to Microsoft, they've been in it all along, yada yada. Well, that's now Google, Apple, and Microsoft all getting into the gadget, wireless radiation gadget arena. Next story, Internet of Things to launch in the UK next year. All right, more gadgets, wireless radiation. Next story, this tide tracking surf watch is one tubular timepiece. So you get a watch. This is a smartphone or smart technology watch. And it can track the tides for you. Well, of course, it has to go to a server somewhere to track the tides, I suppose. Do you need a watch to track the surf? You know, come on. These guys are desperately trying to sell us gadgets that can kill us. Next story. Zenith announces a wireless remote for your child's bedroom light. So this is a remote control on your light. It's not enough to have a switch on your light. It's not enough to have, you know, sometimes a switch is on a cord that comes away from your light. It's not enough for you to turn off your light when you go to bed or have the parent turn off the light. No, now you're giving the child a remote to turn off their own light. Well, of course, now you're giving them a wireless radiation toy so they can dose themselves with wireless radiation continuously if they want to. Next story. Why tech's best minds are very worried about the Internet of Things. Well, there's some report on Wired again last month. Quote, some of the brightest tech minds are expressing some doubts about the potential impact on everything from security and privacy to human dignity and social inequality. So this is like Wired supposedly addressing some of the concerns about wireless. Well, what do you notice they don't mention? microwave radiation. Well played, Wired. Well played. All right, I'm going to try and do the of the weeks now. Try for something a little lighter, perhaps. I'm actually scanning because I had a story, a bad driver of the week story that wasn't exactly lighthearted. It was pretty insane. Well, I guess I'll do it. This was a Cadillac Escalade lunatic. Basically, this person was changing lanes without warning, doing it recklessly over and over again. Turned out he was going the same place as me. He was going to Costco. He was going to do his shopping. What was this hurry? What was going on there? This is someone racing around at 9:30 in the morning on a Tuesday. I just don't get it. This is the kind of person that, you know, large fines are meant for. Driving without due care and attention used to be, in Canada and British Columbia anyway, like 6 points instead of speeding was 3 points. It's like a double fine. This should be a very large fine for what this guy was doing. But of course, unless they're doing it in front of a ghost car, you know, a cop car, no one's going to notice, right? So it's too bad. They're not going to learn because it got no negative consequences. So this person needed negative consequences to learn. Consequences in general cause us to learn, and it can be true when we get a positive consequence. Studies have found that when we get a random positive consequence, we then almost get obsessive about that behavior. And the example I can think of was, if you find a coin in a payphone, there was a time when we used to have payphones, then what will happen is you'll tend to check every coin slot after that because of that one random good thing that happened. Well, to that end, when I see like a cigarette found on the ground, I always make sure I grind it to nothingness because, you know, the same thing can happen for either a homeless person or for a child that they find that cigarette butt, they start smoking it. For the child, it could be their first experience with a cigarette. Numerous times I've found perfectly pristine cigarettes on the ground. Maybe, who knows, maybe someone was riding a bike or walking or something and they dropped a cigarette and once it hit the ground, they're like, oh, germs, and they don't want to touch it. So they just leave it, right, and they grab another. Well, you're now enabling a child. Would you do the same with alcohol? Actually, I have run into full alcohol bottles at times too. Now that I think about it, I've run into needles, packs of cigarettes. Oh, it's just terrific, the stuff you run into. Condoms, of course, used and unused. The things we leave around, you know, we just don't realize the impact of stuff. So that's sort of our bad driver of the week and just, you know, consequences, good and bad, and of the week. All right, my listen of the week. I listened to a guy called Randy Masters. I don't even know the connection now, how I ran across this guy, but very interesting guy. He calls himself a harmonic mathematician, and he can do some stuff with a piano, with music. That's kind of amazing. That was worth a listen. He's also a very sort of wise and omni-talented, omni-aware person. I'd check him out. All right, my rewatch of the week. Robot and Frank with Frank Langella. This Frank Langella in this movie, it's just delightful. Plays this old person. The movie's set in the future where he's an old person and he's infirm. His relatives get a robot to care for him. I don't want to give too much away, but this is one of these movies that the writer directed it, I believe, you know, and it's got that cohesiveness to it. You know, the story comes through in the final product. Frank Langella is perfect. It's got great music. It tickles my I like it bone. So I recommend Robot and Frank. My cool thing of the week, some code-cracking teens. This is in Canada. The story has happened in Canada. And they cracked an ATM. All they did was they went online, they found the operating manual for an ATM, like freely available. They studied it. I guess there's like a default password. They went and used a default password at their local ATM in like the local mall or wherever. They hacked it. Then they went and told the manager and the ATM people or the bank people, and the bank people were like, you can't be doing that. They're like, want us to do it again? And they went and did it again. They printed out proof. They changed the message on the machine. They changed the amount, the transaction fee to a penny. And this was kind of amazing. Unfortunately, this story could have ended with them being prosecuted, but because it's Canada, they don't get prosecuted for this. But nowadays, you do that kind of thing, you get prosecuted for it. You get punished for doing it. For finding the weakness in someone else's system. All right. Quote of the week. I've accumulated a number of interesting quotes that sort of lend themselves to being talked about. I'll just do this one. This is one I think I got this about a week ago. It's from Martha Heyer, H-Y-E-R. I guess she was born in 1924 and she passed away this year. So somehow it was brought to my attention by the media, you know, famous person dies or whatever. I've never heard of her, but anyway. I think she was maybe an actress. All right, so the quote is, when you live with fame as a day-to-day reality, the allure of privacy and anonymity is as strong as the desire for fame for those who never had it. Well, this is the sort of the dark underbelly of fame, right, of celebrity. We all chase it, we all want it, we all admire it, we all want autographs of it. But then when you get it, you hate it. So many don't want it. The Paul Newmans, they hang around in Vermont because they don't want to be part of the fame scene. Stephen King, who just drives around. The Brett Favre, who drives his pickup truck, you know. So many don't want fame, but then for everyone that doesn't want it, 1,000 do. But let's look at her name and see, why is this person saying this? So Martha, 257. Martha Heyer, when you put them together, H-Y-E-R, you get a 729 total. Then you look at her birthday, August 10, 1924. Her numbers in the birthday, there's three influences, the month, day, and year. And their numbers are 8, 1, 7 for 7 total. And a 7 last minor, meaning from the time she turned age 54, which was in 1978, until 2014, so the last 20, 36 years of her life, she was under the 7. So, just by the numbers, Martha Heyer was a 7 under a 7 for the last 34 years of her life, and she had a 7-ish first name and a 729 total. Well, you can just talk about the 7 quality and you've got this person. What is the 7? They're the loner. They're the person who wants to be by themselves. There's a person that wants privacy and doesn't want fame. Well, yeah. So that's the person that can comment on the subject of fame, right? They didn't have it, then they got it, then they didn't want it. Yeah, this world is missing out on the numbers, missing out on people having awareness of the numbers. And so we suffer and we have accidents and we get cancers and we wish we were alone when we're not. And our names just pull us in all these different directions and we get no peace, we get no enjoyment, and life is unfair just from lack of this principle, your name creating your mind principle. It's too bad. It's a well-kept secret. This has been Floyd Maxwell, justthinkit.com, doing Floydcast number 19 for June 23rd, 2014. Good luck with your life. Take care.